given by you yourself. So my introduction is, I am the greatest human being that has ever lived on this planet, and there is no one that will ever be like me or has ever been like me, and we're all blessed that I could be here today, and I appreciate everyone else being here today. And that's it. That's pretty much my... No, so the serious introduction is that I work as the Mashkiach Ruchani for the... Yeah. You all agreed. Oh, that's perfect. So you should have given the introduction then. So the real introduction is that I work as the Mashkiach Ruchani across the street in Skokie Yeshiva. I work for the Beis Medrash specifically. Next year, I'm taking on a very different role. I'll be working in the high school as well. So I'll be both in the high school and the Beis Medrash, just to give me a little bit more time to myself and to make sure that I had extra time. And what we're going to speak about today is we're going to talk about the connection between Rabbi Shimon Bar Yochai and Rabbi Akiva, and where Rabbi Shimon Bar Yochai came up with what we know of as Lag BaOmer, this idea of what happens in Lag BaOmer, the ideas and the concepts behind it, and how that connects back to his Rebbe, Rabbi Akiva. To do that, we need a little bit of an introduction. The introduction is the Gemara in Shabbos on Daf Lamed Gimel Amud Beis. The Gemara in Shabbos, and I'm sure everybody's heard parts of this story, little bits of the story here and there. It's an amazing, amazing story that's brought by the Gemara. Rabbi Shimon Bar Yochai had a discussion together with two other great sages of his generation. Rabbi Yossi was there, and Rabbi Yehuda bar Rabbi Eloi. We'll see these names come up again. Rabbi Yehuda bar Rabbi Eloi, Rabbi Yossi bar Chalafta, and Rabbi Shimon Bar Yochai. It's Rabbi Shimon, Rabbi Yossi, Rabbi Yehuda. They had a whole discussion. Was it good for them to be in the hands of the Romans? The Romans were in charge at the time. Was that a good thing, or was that a bad thing? Rabbi Yehuda thought it was a great thing, that the Romans were only doing great things. They had led into marketplaces, they had given us bridges, they had done all these great things for us. Rabbi Yossi was silent. Rabbi Yossi had no opinion on the matter, said, whatever it is, it is. Rabbi Shimon said, absolutely not. They're doing everything for themselves. It's not helping us at all. They have their own interests, their self-interests in mind. The reason why they're making the marketplaces is to make their propaganda more popular. The reason why they're making these bathhouses is to lead lewd into these lewd types of relationships between different people. That's their business. That's what they're doing. Said Rav Shimon Bar Yochai, there is nothing good that we're getting from the Romans. That's what Rav Shimon Bar Yochai claimed. The Romans eventually heard about this, and the Romans exiled Rabbi Yossi, brought Rabbi Yehuda up. They called him Rosh HaMedavrim, that he was the first to speak. At any time, Rabbi Yehuda will be the Rosh HaMedavrim, the first to speak, and Rabbi Shimon was sentenced to death. Rabbi Shimon then ran away. First, he hid in the Beis Medrash. The Beis Medrash had thousands of students at the time. You had a huge, huge Beis Medrash, and one person could get lost in the crowd. Rabbi Shimon and his son lost themselves in the crowd. Even his wife wasn't positive exactly where he was, but eventually Rabbi Shimon said, that's not enough. They could do something to my wife, to your wife, to try to find out where we are, to make sure that doesn't happen. Rabbi Shimon said, we're running away. They ran away up north near the cities of Miron and Tzfat, all those areas around there. And they stayed in that cave for 12 years, then a 13th year altogether, studying together and going over everything that they could, certain things that we, unfortunately, are not privy to be a fly on the wall while that was going on would be absolutely amazing. Rabbi Shimon, Rabbi Elazar, Rabbi Shimon, Rabbi Elazar, his son, had tremendous conversations. When they left, the first time they left, they walked out of the cave, and they saw a man that was plowing his field, doing the normal things that a person does in his workday. Now it had been so long since they had seen a normal human being doing a normal job. Their lives were filled with Torah thoughts, and they said, how could a person waste their time doing this? How could he do such a thing? It can't be. Such a thing is not for this world. If you want to waste your time doing what... They couldn't understand it. Their eyes, they looked at the field, they burned the field in ashes. What that really means is that they gave it an ayin hara, the evil eye, and the field just didn't last. Bad things happened to the field. HaKadosh Baruch Hu called out from Shemayim, a bas kol, a heavenly voice called out, and obviously only Rabbi Shimon and his son could hear this, and said, did I bring you out of the cave to destroy my world? Is that what I told you to get it, to come out for? Go back to the cave. And they spent another year studying and going over the same subjects but with a different perspective. And this time, when they left the cave after the 13th year, Rabbi Shimon was ready. He saw how everybody had a purpose, everybody had a plan. There are certain people doing this, certain people doing that. His son, Rabbi Elazar, still couldn't understand that. And that's a story for another time, how Rabbi Elazar lived his life, an extremely interesting story of Rabbi Elazar, the son of Rabbi Shimon's life, what he did and how he got to the conclusions that he got to. But Rabbi Shimon had this idea, this way of looking at the world where everything, you can learn anything from everyone. He still, even throughout his life, paskened, he held as a halacha that a person should only learn, and every bit of work that he has to do will be done for him. That if a person commits himself to learning, this is what will happen. Rabbi Yishmael, one of his contemporaries, an older contemporary, possibly even a rabbi of Rabbi Shimon, held differently. He said, what do you mean? We say every day in our Shema, "Be'asafta deganecha," you will gather your grain. You'll gather your grain means you have to work, and you have to set aside time for work, you have to set aside time for study, and you have to do both. You're required to do both. Rabbi Shimon held, no. If you're not worthy, then you'll have to gather your own grain. But if you're worthy, you'll be able to sit and study all day long, and everything will happen for you. That was Rabbi Shimon's opinion. So he understood that other people did other things, but he told people, if people would come up to him and ask him his opinion, he would tell them, do nothing else but study, commit yourself to it, and nothing else will happen. This is an amazing look where he understood where everyone's coming from, yet nonetheless he held, commit yourself, this is where it is. To understand Rabbi Shimon's viewpoint and where he got this from and where this understanding could from takes us back a generation. Rabbi Shimon was the youngest of the students of Rabbi Akiva. Now, Rabbi Akiva was well known as not a ger, he was the son of gerim, but Rabbi Akiva was a man who was an am haaretz. He knew nothing. For the first 40 years of his life, he was tremendous in his character traits. He was a very, very good person. The Gemara gives him as an example, as a tremendous worker, a person who works hard, and somebody who also judged people favorably. There's a Gemara about being Dan Lechavskos, and it gives Rabbi Akiva as the example. Now, it's not in the Gemara itself. You have to look around for it. But he is the example of someone who judged everyone favorably, and in such a great way, this is Rabbi Akiva. Rabbi Akiva realized that he was missing something in life, and he decided he's going to commit himself to learning. He first went to Nachum Ish Gamzu, the famous man who said, Gamzu Latova. Whenever anything bad happened, he would say, this is also for the good. And there are great stories about Nachum Ish Gamzu. He learned by him, learned the Aleph Beis by him, and started to, sort of like his kindergarten teacher, who built him up a little bit. And Nachum Ish Gamzu was well known. He was Melumed Benisim. He had miracles happening to him all the time. The stories with Nachum Ish Gamzu in the Gemara of him going to the Roman emperor, who happens to be, it was the one right before Trajan. It was after Vespasian. When Vespasian died, Domitian. It was Domitian. So Domitian, when Domitian was put in charge, that whole story of Nachum Ish Gamzu bringing him a treasure box filled with jewels, and it turned out that somebody switched the jewels for dirt, and he brought the dirt in, and the Roman emperor said, Eliyahu Hanavi said that maybe it's the dirt of Abraham, and if we throw it, it's going to turn into arrows, and that Domitian used it in his war against the Chatti, the wild people of the north near Germany, the people that they were known as Chatti, that they used against it. That's Nachum Ish Gamzu's story. Rabbi Akiva was with him the whole time. He was the student going with Nachum Ish Gamzu. When Nachum Ish Gamzu, at the end of his life, had a horrible, horrible thing happen to him where he had lost usage of his arms and his legs, he was blinded, he had terrible sores all over his body, Rabbi Akiva was the student who went to his Rebbe and said, Rebbe, what can we do for you? And he said, this is what I took upon myself for something bad that I did once. I didn't give a poor man bread. And because of that, I took all these punishments on myself. That was Rabbi Akiva. It's amazing. Rabbi Akiva saw this man, Nachum Ish Gamzu, and then went off to learn for 24 years by Rabbi Eliezer and Rabbi Yeshua. Now look at Rabbi Akiva. Rabbi Akiva had 24,000 students. 12,000 pairs of students, not at one time. That would make for a tremendously large class, and I'm not so sure his voice could project without a microphone. But over time, he had built up a repertoire of 24,000 students, 12,000 pairs of chavrusas who all considered him their guy. They all said, Rabbi Akiva, he is our rabbi. And they were throughout the world, from the south part, Be'er Sheva of Eretz Yisrael, all the way to Antipras, all the way by Greece and by Italy, that people had spread out everywhere. And all these rabbis called Rabbi Akiva their rabbi. And at one point, At one point, Rabbi Akiva was almost 115 years old. A terrible plague went down. A terrible plague. This is, just remember, around 45 years after the Beis HaMikdash, the second temple, had been destroyed. We're not talking about a time where things were going well for the Jews anyway, and things were happy. It's when they were already being destroyed, they were already being taken down. In fact, two of the 10 martyrs of the Asaru Gemalchus had already been killed. Rabbi Yishmael Kohen Gadol and Rabbi Shimon ben Gamliel II had already been killed. And Rabbi Akiva is living during this time. And then, when everything seemed to be calm, a little bit calmer, it seemed to be a little bit better than what it was, all of a sudden, 24,000, well, a plague went out, and it turned out that the only people who died from this plague, no children, no woman, nobody died except for 24,000 people who all considered Rabbi Akiva to be his Rebbe. Rabbi Akiva looked at himself, and he was left with nothing, bereft of any students. Think of his life, 40 years starting to learn, committing himself for the next 40 years in learning and spending 24 years away from his family, seeing the temple being destroyed. And then afterward, spending 40 years teaching and being involved with all of these students trying to start over. When everybody else had been destroyed, so many Jews were gone. So many rabbis were gone. And there weren't that many people who were committed to learning. And he sees all of his students and he notices this is not just a coincidence. This is his students who all died. So he sat there and he said to himself, what am I supposed to do? A person like Rabbi Akiva, with a Rebbe like Nachum Ish Gamzu, understood he's got to start over. And his start over, he began again, and he was able to find five students. Five students. These five students are by far, for somebody who's learned the Gemara and learned Mishnah, will recognize these names in a second. They're names that are throughout, because every Mishnah that we have is based on Rabbi Akiva's Torah. And it would have been lost had Rabbi Akiva said, forget it, I'm done. If you would have said after the 24,000, no one could blame him, but after the 24,000 students were gone, if you would have said, I can't do this anymore. I'm old. I'm 115 years old. I can't do this. I'm out. He said, no, we're going to make this happen. And he found Rabbi Meir and Rabbi Yehuda. Rabbi Meir and Rabbi Yehuda are famous for being the two that started the Mishnayos. If you ever see a Mishnah that doesn't have an author, it's Rabbi Meir or Rabbi Yehuda. It's one of the two. They are the Tanakama, the people that we always know, the Chachamim that are mentioned, the Chachamim and the Rabbanan, anywhere that's mentioned in Mishnah is Rabbi Meir or Rabbi Yehuda 95% of the time. Then came Rabbi Yossi Bar Chalafta, who we just talked about in the beginning of the story. Rabbi Yehuda, by the way, is that Rabbi Yehuda for the story as well, who became the Rosh HaMedavrim, the first to speak. Got Rabbi Yehuda, Rabbi Meir. Rabbi Yossi, he took on for himself to learn the extra stuff. The stuff that wasn't going to be put in the Mishnah, he would be the author of a different set of Talmudic statements. That was Rabbi Yossi. Rabbi Elazar became very famous to be the double with Rabbi Yossi. Whatever Rabbi Yossi couldn't finish off, Rabbi Elazar himself started getting involved. And if you see those names, Rabbi Yehuda, Rabbi Meir, Rabbi Yossi, Rabbi Elazar, throughout the Mishnayos, these are the four students of Rabbi Akiva. And the fifth and youngest of them all was Rabbi Shimon Bar Yochai, the Rabbi Shimon that's mentioned throughout the Mishnayos. These were his five students. And in fact, they were so young, so inexperienced, these five, that when Rabbi Akiva gave them smicha and made them into rabbis, it wasn't even accepted. The people looked at them and said, they're too young for this. These guys can't be rabbis. They're not ready. They're young kids. It's not time for this. So all five students weren't accepted. Only after Rabbi Akiva passed away and Rabbi Yehuda ben Bava, another person of his generation, took them on as his students, then they accepted them as rabbis. But at the time, when Rabbi Akiva was alive, they weren't even well known. And all of our Torah comes from that. It's an unbelievable lesson from Rabbi Akiva. You lose everything, start over again. Build it up again. See what happens. The same lesson is learned from Boaz in the story of Rus. Boaz had 60 children. 60, 30 sons and 30 daughters, the Gemara tells us. 30 sons and 30 daughters. And all of them died in his lifetime. His wife died. I'm sure he had more than one wife. Otherwise, I applaud that woman. But Boaz had his wife died, his children died, and he's sitting there at the end of his life. He's an older man. And even then, He wanted to get remarried. He wanted to start over. And we see what happened. Boaz marries Ruth. Ruth eventually has Obed. Obed gives birth to Yishai, and Yishai gives birth to David HaMelech. Had Boaz said, and again, no one can blame me, if someone said to Boaz, Boaz, it's time, just give up. There's no purpose. What's the you just had 60 children, and all of them died. Not only they died, their children died, his son-in-laws and his daughter-in-laws died. They all passed away. Had anybody like that seen this, what are we supposed to think to ourselves? But Boaz said, no, I'm starting again. I'm going to do whatever I can to make sure that what I do is going to be different. I'm going to do something different this time. And Boaz did it, and we got David HaMelech from that. Rabbi Akiva thought the same way. Years and years later, we're talking about a difference of almost 800 years later, 820 years later. But Rabbi Akiva comes along and says, I'm not giving up. I'm not letting that happen. I'm going to start over, and I'm sure this time it's going to work out differently. And it did. We don't have any Torah. I don't even know a name of the 24,000 Talmidim. If you would ask me who those 24,000 students are that we're mourning right now, that I have to worry about beards everywhere, right, because of, then I'll tell you, I don't know. I don't know who they were. I can't tell you a single name. They don't appear throughout any of the Gemaras. There's nothing. All I know is that they passed away during this time. But the five students that he came up with, that's the David HaMelech. He came up with a whole new kingdom that stemmed from there. Never give up. Try again. And start it all over again. And maybe you could say that this is Rabbi Akiva taking the lesson of Nachum Ish Gamzu. Nachum Ish Gamzu understanding everything's for the best. Everything is for the best. It doesn't matter what happens. We know that HaKadosh Baruch Hu is along with us. And that line, even that Gamzu Latova, even this is good. You might think it's bad. It's not. Even this is good. In fact, there's only one other person in the Gemara, in the entire Talmud and Midrashim, that has anything similar to this line of Nachum Ish Gamzu, of Gamzu L'Tova, of even this is for the good. And of course, it's Rabbi Akiva. Rabbi Akiva has a line, and it's mentioned in Shabbos, Kol D'Avid Rachmana L'Tav Avid. Everything that Hashem does is for the good. And there you get into the commentaries. What's the difference between this is also good, and everything that God does is good? What's the difference? Which one is better than the other? Which line is there? But Rabbi Akiva said this line. And you know what happened? It's an unbelievable story. When did he say this line? When was this line used? He's running away from the Romans. This is after the Bar Kokhba rebellion had failed. After they had failed, he, Rabbi Akiva, this is again, he had lost 24,000 students. He had proclaimed that Bar Kokhba was the Mashiach. He was going to lead the Jews out. And that Bar Kokhba started gathering an army. And he saw that it wasn't going to work. He saw that Bar Kokhba, either out of his ego, his pride, the issues that Bar Kokhba had, he knew it wasn't going to happen. And he had to step back. And he stepped back. He said, Bar Kokhba, I'm not with you anymore. And he stepped back. And he was running away from Bar Kokhba. At that time, the Roman legions were staging all these different armies coming in from all sides to eventually meet up with Bar Kokhba and Beitar. As it's happening, Rabbi Akiva went down south. One legion of the Romans was coming up from the south. And Rabbi Akiva came up to a city. He didn't want to stay outside of a city because it was very dangerous. He had to worry about marauding tribes. He had to worry about the armies that the Romans had. And goes up to a certain city, and he asked them, can I stay overnight in the city? The city said, no, you can't stay here. The city's not for you. He said, please, it's Rabbi Akiva. They said, we know you're not Rabbi Akiva, because Rabbi Akiva is with Bar Kokhba. So we know you're a liar. You can't be Rabbi Akiva. He said, look at me. I'm Rabbi Akiva. Everyone knows who I am. His students were saying, this is Rabbi Akiva. Everybody knows Rabbi Akiva. And the city said, absolutely not, you can't be. Because we know that Rabbi Akiva is with Bar Kokhba. It can't be that you're Rabbi Akiva. So they wouldn't let him in. So he went out into the fields, and he had to stay out in the fields with his students and what he had with him. And he had with him a donkey, a chicken, and a candle. And that's it. And the story goes, this is how the Gemara mentions it. The Gemara says that at first, what happened was the light went out. A wind came, blew out the light. Every time they tried relighting the candle, they couldn't relight it. So the students turned to Rabbi Akiva. Rabbi Akiva said, doesn't matter. Kol David Rachman L'Tav Avid. Everything that God does is for the good. Their donkey was eaten by a lion. Their chicken was eaten by, I don't know, make up an animal that's in the, yeah, wolf. It would have been a jackal, right, that would have been around there. And in the end, everything that happened, the students were like, Rebbe, we have lions by us. We have a jackal near us. We don't have any light. What are we going to do? He said, Kol David Rachmanu L'Tav Avid. They went to sleep. And the next morning they saw that during the night, a Roman troop had come to the city, bought it, sieged it, destroyed it, burned it, razed it to the ground. And then one of the people that escaped the city found them and told them what had happened. Rabbi Akiva said, if you realize, if we would have had that candle lit, the Roman troops would have seen us. Had the donkey brayed in the middle of the night, that would have given away our position. Had the chicken or the rooster crowed, then that would have also given away our position. So we see Kol David Rachmana L'Tav Avid. It's, after the fact, it's 20/20 hindsight vision. But the concept that Rabbi Akiva was saying it beforehand, that he without a question learned from Nachum Ish Gamzu. And now let's extend it. Taking that idea of Kol David Rachmana L'Tav Avid, that everything God does is for the good, allowed him to understand that, look, losing all of your students, starting over, is not easy. What am I supposed to do? But nonetheless, this is what God wants me to do. This is what I'm going to do. This is how I'm going to live my life. Rabbi Shimon Bar Yochai also understood that there was a plan. When he spoke his mind. He said, this is what I feel about the Romans. This is what I feel that they're doing. I feel that it's not the right thing for us to give them praise for it. He felt that way. He understood that there were people who would think otherwise. He understood that there was a second opinion there, but Rabbi Shimon Bar Yochai held, this is what I have to say. I feel this way. He held by his convictions, and he went ahead and he said it. And then he saw that he was punished for it. Thrown into a cave, there were tremendous yisurin, tribulations that he went to all in the cave. It's not easy to be in a cave. I don't know if anybody's had caribs or buxers before, right? So I know what they look like. I know what they taste like. I can't imagine eating buxer ever, let alone to have it for 12 years straight, as well as a little pond that comes outside of my cave and drinking only that water and living that way for 12 years, living on buxer and water. So in the one way, right, you look at it and you say, HaKadosh Baruch Hu gave him a tremendous miracle. What a miracle to get a buxer tree that just grew outside the cave, to have water going through. But HaKadosh Baruch Hu, you couldn't make a hamburger tree? You couldn't have made, I don't know, a Coke river go through, right? Wouldn't have that been so much better? He's sitting there in sand up until his neck so that he doesn't wear out his clothing because he doesn't know how long he's going to be there. He had cracks throughout his skin. His skin was so dried and cracked from sitting inside there. He could have said, HaKadosh Baruch Hu, you couldn't have just given me clothing? But he understood there's a purpose to everything, and even this helped make him into the person that he is today. When he left the cave at first, he looked at it and he said this, and he really held it. If you do what I do, and you accept what HaKadosh Baruch Hu gives you, and you understand that the purpose of life can be to learn Torah, if you understand that there is a purpose in life to learn Torah, he looked at everybody else, and he said, then look at me. You'll be fine. Everything will work out. The buxer tree will grow for you. The water will be given. You might not get what you want. You might not get your Coke and hamburger, but you'll get what you need, and everything will work out for you. If you do this, this is the result. Look at what I have. And when he saw people doing other things, he couldn't understand it. You're working? Why? Why would you do such a thing? He couldn't understand it. He couldn't believe it. Look at me. Look at what I've gotten. You have to accept what you have. And when people would say, well, we want a little bit more. We don't want to live off buxer and water, right? We want hamburgers and Coke. I would look at them and say, why? Why would you waste your time like this? He couldn't understand it. Couldn't understand it. To that, Hashem said, go back to the cave. You see for yourself how everything is good, how everything can become better. You're seeing that for yourself. Now I want you to see by other people as well that everything that people do can be good for them. It's an added structure. Nachum Ish Gamzu said, this is also good. Rabbi Akiva said, everything that God does is good. He was able to see that everything, I guess you could say it's almost like he added on to it. Nachum Ish Gamzu said, it's bad, but it's also good. It's bad, but it has an aspect of goodness to it. Rabbi Akiva saying, no, everything is good. Everything is good. There's no such thing as bad. Kol David Rachmana L'Tav Avid. And Rabbi Shimon Bar Yochai was taught the third lesson going through in which he said, not only is it good, but everything is good for every person. And not everyone can be like me. What do I suggest? If you would ask me, I'll tell you, sit and learn all day long, everything will be taken care of, and I'm living proof of that. That's what Rabbi Shimon would tell people. But if you're not asking me, you're just doing what you want to do because you feel that's best for you, fine. Kol David Adam Lirachmana L'Tav Avid. That line is never used in the Gemara. So I hate adding on to something. But the concept is, whatever a person does for God is also good. And you have to work on it. There are limitations to that, because that can't mean that you could do whatever you want, whenever you want. That clearly any parent would tell their children that's not the right thing to do. But the concept of kol de'avid adam l'rachmana l'tavavid is the lesson the Reb Shimon Bar Yochai can learn and teach us, and that's what he did. Rabbi Elazar, his son, didn't get it. And that's why even after that extra year, he came out and he said, I don't understand what people are doing. They should do like us. Rabbi Shimon Bar Yochai understood. No. Every person has their purpose, what they need to do in this world, how they have to do it. Some of them will be like me, and some of them are going to do their own thing. They're going to be on their own. They're going to get there. And maybe, this is what we do on Lag BaOmer. Lag BaOmer was the day, according to the Chassam Sofer. This is really from the Chassam Sofer. People claim it's from the Arizal. The Arizal never said this, but the Chassam Sofer says this is the day the Reb Shimon Bar Yochai passed away, and it's the day the Reb Shimon Bar Yochai was born. Because great tzaddikim are born and died on the same day. So Sunday is the anniversary not only of his yortzeit, of his death, but also of his birth, of when he was born. And Reb Shimon Bar Yochai's life was about taking the Torah that you've learned and bringing it out to the fields. Bringing it out and showing how it's not just a static Torah that belongs inside the walls of the Beis Medrash and remains inside there. It's a Torah that needs to be living. It needs to live within you. Wherever you go, you bring it with you. Some of us will be able to be like Reb Shimon Bar Yochai. I can't do it, to be able to sit and learn and do nothing else all day long. That's not me. But there are people out there that are Reb Shimon Bar Yochais. But Reb Shimon Bar Yochai accepted, and even did more so, showed people, this is what you can do. Go out to the fields. Shoot your bows and arrows. Go play baseball. I feel that baseball nowadays, it's got to be softball, because then there's an arc, so it looks like a rainbow. So it's got to be softball that you're playing, and you have to hit. You cannot hit ground balls. It has to be up in the air, so you're always hitting rainbows the entire time. It's always like a rainbow. So I feel it's more softball than anything else, right? Maybe play football, so you can throw it up in the air like that, but not frisbee, because that's my idea. But the concept is that Reb Shimon Bar Yochai is telling us, I know, I'd love you to learn all day, but if you can't, then at least show how you can be part of the world. Show how you can bring your Torah skills, your midos, your proper character traits, and everything you have, and use it in the world at large. That's the reason why this became a minig in Klal Yisrael. Such a custom of like going out and doing something on this day came from this idea, and it's all stemming from his interpretation of the lesson that his Rebbe had taught him, that he had gotten from his Rebbe, and that he can take it all the way back. And maybe that's something we can take for ourselves. We can go and take it for ourselves and say to ourselves that that might not be me. But if he's doing this, l'rachmana, for the right reasons, for his way of understanding how the Torah goes, and again, it has to be based on the Torah, it can't be on our own, but as long as he's doing it that way, then there's a lesson to be learned here, something great that comes out from it, and this could be the lesson of Lag BaOmer. Have a great day, everyone. Are there any questions? Yes, please.